Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. What if the Hercules of the Marvel Universe was tasked by his Zeus to discover what misfortune befell Apollo in the classic Star Trek continuity? This strange scenario, first explored in a home-based RPG game in the early 1980s, launched a storyline that spanned three decades, spilled into fandom, inspired countless quirky creative endeavors, helped promote literacy, and bridged many otherwise incongruous science fiction visions. In 2012, Stargate Olympus, as it was called at the time, wrapped up the tale with Die Gungan Die and Wookiee Holocaust, our last two campaigns in northeastern Pennsylvania. Afterwards, starting in 2013, and in the proud tradition of Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek, we've re-envisioned our core premise, streamlined our mythos, and rebooted this epic saga. The Time Wars unfolded on RPG gaming tables throughout northern New Jersey and started expanding to fan club meetings, social media, podcasts, and local events until the pandemic put our expansion on hold. And now, in 2021, as life slowly returns to normal, we return as the Olympian Argonape, coming soon somewhere near you. Tonight, I'm very proud to announce Mythic Gaming with Tim Espy and Zach McAtee. Greetings and welcome, Tim and Zach. How are you?
Greetings. Hello. Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to sharing my review a little later on of You Choose Books, Hercules and His 12 Labors. And I'm looking forward to learning more about Icarus and whatever else you guys are bringing to the show today.
Yes, I have a few things to report on when the time comes.
Awesome. And Zach, how about you?
I'm doing well, and I'm excited to talk about Icarus because I think that it's going to be right up your alley.
Fantastic. So we'll start with Icarus then.
Okay, so Icarus is a storytelling game. It's sort of an RPG light would be the best way to put it. There's no DM. There's no stats. There are dice rolls. I'll explain them in a second. They're not the same way you would see them in an RPG. The idea is this is a simulation of how a civilization falls apart. So at the beginning of the game, collectively the group decides on a setting, either one of the ones included in the book or one they make whole cloth, and then they create the city of Icarus. The city is always named Icarus because it is doomed to fall. And when you create the city, it is at its height of power and reach, completely in control of its own destiny and at the height of whatever technological or magical nature it has. Over the course of the game, you will then tear the city down brick by brick until nothing is left but the name and the memory. The way the game works is fairly simple. At the beginning of the game, you deal out 12 cards to the number of players, one to each player. They represent different pillars of society. So, for example, you might have health, agriculture, education, art, or military. There are several others. But you deal one to each player and then put one in the middle of the table that no one picked. The one in the middle of the table is going to be the inspiration for a great monument the city of Icarus has decided to build because they're just so great that they need a monument to show off how great they are. The hubris is the start of the fall, as you would guess. So you collectively decide what the monument is based off of the pillar that inspired it. So in one game, for example, the pillar that inspired the monument was health. So we came up with the idea that this was a living museum of sorts where it would archive everyone in the colony's DNA so that it'd be easier in the future to cross-reference and maybe solve disease issues and try and help overall health for the community. In the game I played with Tim, it was supposed to be nature, but the idea was the corporations kind of bought out sponsorship on it. So despite the fact that it was supposedly celebrating nature and the environment, it was marred by all these corporate logos and the faces of all these CEOs, which immediately caused unrest within the people. Once the monument has been created, you deal everyone a roll card. There's only 5 at the moment. I don't know if they're planning on doing any expansions. I do hope they do so. I'm sure you could also home rule some of the roll cards, but they're essentially a motivation for the character that you're going to create. One that I had before was protect the citizens. One of them might be get rich. I think Tim had that in our last game. That is bring Icarus down. Once you have a pillar and a roll, you're going to look at the two of them and use them as inspiration to create a character in the city that you will then influence and control. So, for example, my job was to protect this. My role was protect the citizens, and I was attached to communication as a pillar. The character I came up with was a doctor who specialized in languages. The idea was that the colony we were in had a hard time transmitting sound. So instead, everyone tended to use a new form of sign language. My doctor was obsessed with trying to catalog the previous verbal languages so that we didn't lose our history of those. Tim, for example, in the last game, he was tied to energy, and his role was get rich. So he was the greedy CEO of a company that had previously allowed people to get energy for free, but now decided that they were going to charge fees for it, and if you couldn't afford it, then you would just have to go without power. Once you have a character in place, you take the first few cards of the story deck, which is consisting of 3 tiers of cards that slowly increase in, I guess, what you would call as the not lethality, but danger. So you take 2 cards off the top. Devastation, yes. You take 2 cards off the top and then answer them collectively as a group. So you might get a question that says, something strange appeared on the horizon of the city. What is it and who was sent to investigate? And then the group collaboratively answers this question. Once you do that with the first 2 cards, you set up 2 strengths and a weakness based off of, a strength for every player except one who does a weakness question, based off of their pillar. In the game we had with Tim, we had, what was our weakness, Tim? Let's see, because it was, mine. Yes, it was a threat to the citizens. So it was, what is something that the city fears?
Yeah.
And what is the reason they fear it? But then Tim and Jamie had strengths, positive questions. So Jamie's question was related to art, and it was, okay, what is the primary art form that the city is known for? We were in a jungle setting, so the idea she came up with was that they used vines to cast shadows that would look like silhouettes of different animals and things. And I know people do this in real life. Yes. Once you have established the strengths and one weakness for the city, the rounds now begin. The way the game functions is a storytelling plus die rolling game. So each turn, every active player gets 1d6. The custom d6 for the game, 4 of the sides are blank, 2 of them have a pillar on them. The pillar counts as a success, the blank sides are a failure. With your 1 die, you're going to look at what you've put on the board. You should have a note card for every single question that you've answered. So once you decided what you are most interested in. For example, when I was playing the scientist who was interested in communication, I looked at the card for the monument, and I said, you know what, I'm a doctor. I want to be involved in trying to establish this monument. So I took my D6, put it on the note card representing the monument, and narrated how my character was hoping to effect a change there. You go around the table with each person placing 1 die and doing the same thing, and then once everyone has placed a die, you take 1 of the D6 from the pool and put it in the middle of the table by the monument card. At the end of every round, 1 die is getting added to that to form the monument. Whenever the monument falls, the city does as well. You could have a very lucky game and only add 1 D6 to the tower every turn, but it gets tricky because after everyone has placed their die and you add the timer die to the tower, you take turns in player order rolling to see if your character successfully managed to change what they were interested in. So I would take my D6 off of the monument, roll to see if my scientist got involved with the monument's building process, and then if they succeeded, I would narrate how they did, how it affected or changed it in some way, possibly making new note cards onto the table to represent this or adding onto pre-existing ones. And if I failed, I would do the same exact thing, but the situation gets worse or escalates in some way. Any die that roll a blank side immediately get added to the tower in the middle of the table as well. So if you have bad luck, which we did in our game, me, Tim, and Jamie played, I think we rolled one successful die. Almost every single roll was a failure. So the tower grew extremely quickly and collapsed almost immediately. But so after you resolve everyone's dice, you pass first player and begin the process again. The whole meat of the game is that you're building the lore and mythos of this city. And the fact that it's collaborative in this manner means that if you don't feel you have inspiration for something, you can ask for help, you can work with the other players. Even if your role is to bring down Icarus, you are still actively creating the story of how Icarus is being brought down. You're not just saying, well, I blew it up on the first turn. You're trying to craft a story to make it make sense. Let's see. Tim, Jamie, and I played, I think it was last Tuesday.
Yep.
And the setting we chose was a dense jungle. The city had been built on a river that served as a major port. It originally started as a fishing village and grew until it was pretty much the biggest city in the whole region. So it was a moderate level of technology and a moderate level of magic. It was kind of a grab bag.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, Tim ran a company that specialized in energy manufacture, but then on the other side of things, my character was essentially the head of the city's defense, and they rode gigantic poison dart frogs to try and fight off these enormous crocodile beasts that were hounding the city. Mm-hmm. And my character had previously
That's what we were, as a society, scared of, were the big alligators.
Yeah. But so,
Is that something that the backstory, is that suggested by the cards, or is that totally invented by the players as you're moving forward?
It's mostly invented. What the setting will give you is it will give you a description of the location. They call it some theme words, so they might say, okay, theme words for the jungle are vines, darkness, water, you know, stuff like that, okay. And it'll give you a list of suggested character names. Everything else is created by the players during play. And they stress that when you initially create Icarus in that, like, pre-first round, don't put too much crazy thought into fleshing everything out, because you'll be doing it as the game goes forward. And you never know what avenue things will take. In the first game that I played, the first card we got was that we saw something strange on the horizon. So I decided to send my scientist out to investigate, and we eventually came up with that there was this odd glowing tree that just showed up out of nowhere. Meanwhile, Jamie was in town, and she was the head of the military for this. It was a Mars settlement, and she was primarily dealing with insurrectionists and rebels that started to rise up as the roots from the tree were destroying the poor districts, and no one was doing anything to help. It's very snap decision and split changes just constantly, so you never know what card will come out. There, some of the cards might ask you positive things, but usually they're bad because you are chronicling the fall of the city.
Okay.
We had a particularly nasty couple turns in the game I played with Tim where the three cards in a row just kind of like they all clicked together, so oops, there was a giant fire tornado that hit the city, and then while the fire tornado was petered out and had destroyed the walls of the city, the giant crocodiles came into the city and started eating everyone. They managed to kill them, but almost all the city's defenses died, and the next card was like, oh, there's some kind of blight affecting the city. So we decided that the crocodiles had a disease on them that when they were killed started to spread across the city and poison the crops as well as the people. This just continues to escalate and escalate until eventually someone knocks over the tower, either by jostling the table or trying to place a die and failing, and you stop immediately and turn to the last page of the manual where there are three questions about the fall of the city and what happens to your characters afterwards, and that's the end of the game.
Wow. How long does this game take?
It highly depends on the number of players and how much each player is putting into it. I could totally see two or three people breezing through it in half an hour to 40 minutes if all of the answers were very short, like one-sentence answers to every question. But I think, as Tim can probably back me up on, you get into it very quickly, and you start really thinking about what you want to happen based off the cards. And I think if you had more than three players, I think you're looking at like 3+ hours at that point, if people are involved. It will take, I would say, on average, 2 to 4 hours, depending on the number of players. So think of like a one-shot like RPG module. It's probably similar in length to something like that.
Okay. And just like with... Oh, go ahead, Tim.
I said ours lasted a couple hours, but, you know, our note cards by the end of it were pretty full for every little scenario, so we were, you know, really getting into it. So, you know, if we, you know, only wrote, you know, a sentence or two, probably take an hour, hour and a half or so.
Is this the game you were telling me about when I came by the store briefly, where you were making up your own cards and things like that after a while?
Yep, exactly. Yep.
Oh, awesome. Do you have anything you want to add to Zach's account?
Yeah, no. So when Zach originally told me about it, not that I was, like, hesitant, but I'm decently creative, but it's just getting the story going is my problem. So what this game was good with, like how Zach said, was that it's collaborative. So, you know, I can have, like, a basis of an idea of what I want to do, and Zach or Jamie would say, like, oh, well, maybe add this, and then that let me run with it, and they would, you know, start to become, you know, part of the full story. So it was good in that sense, which I enjoyed very much.
Thank you. I look forward to experimenting with that when time allows. It reminds me a little bit of Artifact, in that you have evolving over time, and with Artifact you can actually create really kick-ass backstories for some of the artifacts in your game. Here too, you could pause at any point in the process and have created a setting for a game that could be anything from sci-fi to fantasy to, you know, post-apocalypse, or, you know, whatever setting you want to put it in, and you'd have a city with a history. And you have enough experience using their system to further elaborate it and make it more real.
As soon as we finished playing it, as soon as we were done, I was like, Hercules would love this.
Thank you. It is now on my list.
Perfect. Yeah, it's perfect ways to explore stories and tie things together with other, you know, other scenarios that you might be running, and bring in characters from other scenarios. It's a really good storytelling tool, and it was super fun, and, you know, good way to exercise the brain and get writing a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I could see Icarus being part of the new Olympian Arcanate thing I'm working on. Yeah, definitely. Put it on another planet or on another plane of existence. Maybe it's something Daedalus is doomed to do, to forever recreate some sort of tribute to his son. And his son, regardless of what he does, how high he rises, always fall like the city. So, definitely.
Perfect.
Well, how did you find out about this game, Zach?
I heard about it back when they put it up on Kickstarter. I think it was probably about five or seven years ago. I didn't back it at the time, but it had been on my radar. And we stopped by one of the local gaming stores. I was looking to spend some money. We were just about to go on a vacation, and I had saved extra, so I had some spending money right before it. I was like, oh, you know what? Let me get something that, you know, I can read the rules for on the plane and everything like that. And I was looking through, and they actually had this on the shelf. It was the first time I'd seen a physical copy. It was only, I think, $30, which I, for the amount of depth we've gotten out of it with just these two plays, I think it's more than paid for itself already. Uh-huh. And I would highly recommend. I think, like you said, this would be a very cool tool for creating a good lore for a living city. I could totally see someone doing this by themselves and just answering the things as they came out. It's definitely more fun with more people, but I could totally see using this as a way to roll up and create cities in an RPG setting.
Very, very, very awesome. I heard of a game recently. Maybe you guys have heard of it. It's called Call to Adventure. They actually have several offshoots for it now, but I'm interested in the main set because it sounds a little bit like you're describing. You know, giving cards and you create this whole mythic saga based on the cards and your interactions with other players.
Yeah, Call to Adventure is great. Zach
has
a copy of it.
Okay.
It was another Kickstarter game. Sorry, what were you saying?
No, I just asked if you could share information on it and you started, so that's great.
Yeah. So it was a Kickstarter game that I backed, I want to say, like 3 or so years ago. We've played the base game. I do have one of the expansions that came as a Kickstarter bonus, but we haven't tried it yet. But the game is very fun. It's got big oversized, like tarot-sized cards. The art is phenomenal. And the way it works is at the start of the game, you get dealt 3 beginnings, 3 motives, and 3 conclusions. So you're going to pick one from each of those categories to form the framework of your character's story. And the beginning and motivation are face up, but the conclusion is face down, so only you know what it is.
Okay.
That's important for scoring reasons. But so the idea is it might be something like, I'm going to take, you know, born in the gutter as my beginning. My motivation might be to become a noble, and then my conclusion might be that I married into the kingdom or I've become the Dark Lord or something like that. Once everyone has their 3 cards set up in their tableau, you're going to take turns buying cards from the market, and the cards will slide underneath of the 3 cards you already have established. So during the first round, when you're buying from cards marked with Act 1, you're going to slide them under your beginning. When you move to the second round and third round, you follow suit. Once someone has 3 cards underneath one of the slots, so beginning, motivation, or conclusion, you then open up the market to the next level. So that means that if I, for example, filled up my beginning card, so now I'm able to buy for motivation, everyone is now available to buy for motivation, even if they can only put it under the beginning card. So it gives you a bit of an edge to be like the second person so that you can kind of buy one step ahead of where you should be able to buy.
Okay.
But it's got an interesting... it's not, I want to say dice rolling, but it's not dice rolling. They have an interesting probability system where you're effectively casting runes. So there's 3 basic runes that you always cast when you're attempting a roll. Then there are runes that you can pay to use, but if you roll one side of them, they give you darkness points, which mean that you're slowly becoming more of a villain as opposed to a hero. But then the cards that you buy will give you runes corresponding to your 6 different stats. So if I get a bunch of the red rune symbols of my cards, that means that when I make any roll related to red in the future, I can use extra red runes with the strength symbol on them, which have a higher rate of success than the normal runes. So it's about building your tableau to be able to get you what cards will give you the most points based off of your conclusion. And you just keep going around until someone finally gets their 3rd card under their conclusion, and then everyone stops. And that's it. So if you didn't fill in your story, if you're missing 1 or 2 cards, that's it. Everyone goes around, tallies up your score, and then they give you the option of narrating like what the story was, what your hero's path took form. That's entirely optional, but it's fun. I've done that with Jamie, and it's fun to like get involved, and like you sit there, and there are times where you see a card that will make the most sense for you score-wise, but it doesn't make sense with the story you're already building in your head for your character. And then you'll see something on the board that does nothing for you point-wise, but you're like, oh, God, it fits exactly what I was trying to do. So then you buy the card that gives you no points just because you want to make a more complete story.
Wow. These are all excellent tools, regardless of what part of the gaming hobby you enjoy. You can use them to create really, really fantastic stories and settings and things to put in those stories and settings and people to populate it with.
Yeah, this would be a good example for like for character hooks, or you know, if you wanted to make a villain, they have dark cards and villain cards that you could build to create a villain in your world that your players will then have to deal with.
Wow. Tim, do you have any games that you'd like to share?
The only thing that I've been playing recently, video game-wise, is the new Resident Evil 8 Village. But I'm not fully done with it yet, so probably next time we talk, I can talk a little bit more about it. But the time that I spent with it, I have like 10 or 12 hours into it already.
Wow.
And it's been fun. It's not the scariest Resident Evil game ever made, but the setting is cool, and it's some unique to the series enemies and some cool fun little interactive puzzles and stuff. But yeah, it's been fun so far. But next time we talk, I'll definitely be done with it and can have the more full story to it.
Thank you very much. That's an old franchise. I remember when that was on, I think, PlayStation 1, and it might have even been older than that. And then there were movies. I remember watching the first few movies. So I'm glad that franchise is still around.
Yeah, it was on PlayStation 1 originally, and still going through almost every console generation, like you said, with movies and books, huge franchise, and arcade games and all this stuff. And it's good to see that with the new iteration of the series, it's still fun and does some new things that they haven't done before in the old games. So they still got ideas and they're still making some good stuff.
Yeah, yes, it sounds like that they are. I played with You Choose books as Hercules and His 12 Labors. And it's a kid's book, generally, but it's a pick-a-path type of experience. And they took the 12 labors of Hercules and divided them into three sets of four. So those are your entry points. And even though I'm phenomenally familiar with the 12 labors and their many different interpretations and iterations, there were three labors where I really had to think about what path I was going to take. And in one of them, I got killed, and I got killed at the least likely for me to have gotten killed at Hercules and the Amazons. And rereading that part, I really still think I made the wise choice, but I guess the book put those in to prevent you from just following the myth. So it had that randomness factor to it. It was well written and well illustrated. Again, this is primarily for kids. But at this particular point in time, between the Olympian Arcanate and some other gaming things I'm doing, there isn't a lot of time for me to game. So it's solo adventures for now and video games. I'll be soon revisiting Gods, which is Hercules in the City of the Gods, which has been abandoned and has weird technology and weird mutant monsters. And then when I can play a PlayStation 1 game, I want to do Herc's Adventures, which is another Hercules adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Done by Lucasfilms, I believe.
Is the book series something new, or is it an older set of books?
It's fairly new. Let me see if I can get a date on this thing right here. It's published by Capstone. And let's see if I get a date for it.
Yeah.
I have three other Hercules pick-a-path adventures. So next month I'll be covering the second one. I think that was called the iHero series. With Hercules. That's the one that I mentioned where I just was glancing through them and I managed to kill myself in the Argonauts in my first choice. So I guess that one will be a little bit more challenging for me. What is new and exciting in the game in the realm of RPGs?
Let's see. I haven't heard of anything besides they just put out a new D&D book. I can't remember the title, but it's kind of like diving into Ravencroft, if you remember that realm.
Yeah.
They made that, I think, back, 2E or 3.5? Way back. But obviously, it's a fan favorite, and they always revisit it. So they're putting out a new adventure book with a lot of lore and mythos for there. And the only thing I've seen from it that like really caught my interest so far was a new creature called the Bagman.
Okay.
And he's effectively an unfightable just horror that the players will never be able to do anything about. Essentially, he was an adventurer who got like scared in a fight with his party, ran away and left them to die, and then to hide from whatever was hunting them, he climbed inside of a bag of holding, which was a bad decision. So once he went inside the bag of holding, he couldn't find his way out, and he's been stuck in that pocket dimension for decades and centuries.
Oh.
And it's slowly warped him and mutated him with its magic. So now he's this immensely tall, slender, long-clawed, you know, like pale, horrible creature that will climb out of players' bags or bags they find to try and take people into his realm to eat. And he'll leave some kind of trinket from another universe behind. And the snippet I saw talked about how they were like, yeah, we are not giving him a stat block because we don't want people to be able to fight him. We want it to be a horror thing. You know, like, if it's horror, you should not have a realistic chance of taking down everything you encounter.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And the whole Ravenloft setting reminds me of the Universal movies of yore, where everything kind of took place in the same area, in the same shared area, but you had Dracula, you had Frankenstein, you had the Wolfman, and you had all these things you know, happening there. And I think they published another 5e version of Ravenloft with Strahd pretty early on. And I think they also came out with a mystery series. They have a city, and then there's a bunch of mysteries that you solve inside the city. I remember glancing through that not so long ago.
Yeah, that was Candlekeep, Mysteries at Candlekeep, something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, the new book we just got in with alternate cover art and stuff looks really, really cool. I flipped through some of the pages when another friend was in the store and we were talking about it, and the art and stuff is super awesome, as always. I didn't see the Bagman thing, though. I want to go through when I get back in on Thursday. I'm going to go through and find his character page and read through it. That sounds like a super cool character.
Yeah,
the art was pretty cool, too.
So you're going to be playing Ravenloft, or are you going to be moving the Bagman into another adventure?
Yeah,
I am totally looking forward to cannibalizing that to use in something in the future.
Yeah, I'm cannibalizing like 30 or nearly 40 years of games to redo the Olympian Arcanade. It's like I'm taking the best of several iterations and putting them here. I already contacted the Starfleet folks, you know, to start the Star Trek part of it. And then the Marvel Hercules, I'm doing a revisiting of every single issue of that series that started way back in the 70s, I believe, and continued until a few years ago, on and off. So it was one big adventure that stretched for decades. Any other
There's something else that I recently just discovered that that ties into this pretty well. I was going through on YouTube and my recommended thing. I get a bunch of music that gets recommended.
Mm-hmm.
So something came up and I clicked on it because the art was nice, and I started listening to it and I was like, oh wow, this record is really good. Let me see if I can buy a vinyl for it. So, you know, I went through and found the link for it, and they had a like a deluxe version, and it came with a little book, and I was like, oh, let me see what this is about. So the book is an entirely self-made RPG module that ties into the vinyl, And the vinyl is like a concept album about an ice fleet that got lost up in like Arctic somewhere. And so the whole album is about the story of that, which ties into the RPG book. So it seems like a pretty simple module and stuff. I was reading through it, something that I might be able to run for once for Zach.
Uh-huh.
But the artist that made the music and everything also did the RPG book. So it's like a whole encompassing story and everything. It was just really well put together. And the story behind the ice fleet is, you know, wrought with conspiracy. Supposedly, it was back in the 20s or 30s. There was a bunch of Russian diplomats or something on the fleet, and it disappeared, you know, quote unquote, disappeared up in the up in the Arctic. And then a group of explorers, I think Norwegian explorers, ended up finding the fleet and taking some notes about it. But then those notes disappeared, and you know, a whole bunch of weird stuff about it, and now just recently came back to light, like, very recently, within the past couple of years. So now more is getting told and found out about the story. So really cool background, and the book is really nice and gives you characters that tie in. So, you know, it does some of the work for you, but you still got to come up with some parts of it.
Oh, that is great, and you can play the album as background for different parts of it, you know, and
yep.
That's a really interesting way of immersing somebody in the tale.
Yep, that's exactly what he recommends, you know, put on the record for your friends as you're playing. You know, I listened to the album the first time through, and I thought it was really good, and then when I found out the story, I re-listened to it, and I was like, oh, the album opens up with, you know, creaking ship sounds, and you hear the bells, and you know, there's, you know, the soundscape woven through the record, you know, really helps you immerse yourself in this, like, cold atmospheric on a ship, you know, 100 years ago. He does a really good job with his music. It was a really fun experience finding out all the information about it.
Oh, that would be great. That are they in the United States, are they based, or are they based elsewhere?
No, he's not. Where is he from? I have it pulled up on my phone here. He's Russian. Oh, he is Russian himself as well.
Okay. Because there are ways now for people in Europe and further afield from Europe to call in to United States line, so it's not a prohibitive call. And I've recently had a guest from Ireland, and I was recently on a show, on somebody else's show in the UK. So there are ways now of getting guests from all over the world. So that might be somebody we want to interview. That sounds phenomenally intriguing and creative, and I can see more of that coming out. I've heard of sound effect albums and music albums to play while you're playing D&D or other fantasy role-playing games, but that seems kind of unique.
Yeah, it was super, super, super cool thing, and he seems pretty accessible from what I've seen in, like, you know, album reviews and everything. He seems pretty easy to get in contact with, so it might be totally possible.
That is great. I two of our hosts on other shows, they're heavily into gaming, so we have a waiting list for guests there, so we could start off the guest thing, you know, maybe by next month. So that would be great if we can get that person. That'd be phenomenal. And maybe we could play some of their music during the show to give people a feel of what he created.
Yeah, I've passed the album around. I posted it in our Discord that me and Zach share. Another music person that is really into it, I shared it with him the other day, and he messaged me, and he's just like, wow, that was amazing. And I ended up buying the record and the RPG book for somebody else because they wanted it too. So it seems like it did something pretty special.
Oh, that is awesome. Have you listened to that, Zach? Have you played with that?
I listened through to some of it, but we haven't gotten a chance to play it. And I don't want to read the book because Tim said he might run it, so I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
Awesome. I had another idea, too, that we can invite gamers on the show to talk about their experience of gaming, and we could start with your significant others. I know Jamie's a gamer. and maybe interview them about their experiences with gaming.
Yeah, sure. it would be fun to get Jamie on here.
All right, we'll put those in the ethers, and we'll play with them between now and then. How about board games?
Let's see. What did I get recently?
I'm trying to think, what have we played recently?
The Search for Planet X.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
So I've never seen another board game quite like it. I've since heard tell of one that uses similar mechanics, but it's effectively a logic elimination puzzle as a board game. So the idea is each player is one of four different sets of astronomers who are trying to find Planet X. We know that it's lurking somewhere in our solar system, but we can't quite nail it down. The reason why is whenever we look at the area it's in, it appears to be empty. So what we have to do is figure out what's in the 12 different areas of the sky, learn the rules that are made for this game. I'll explain that in a second. And use that to deduce which of the 12 sectors has Planet X. The way the game works is through a companion app that's free to download. And what you do is you generate a code for your game, give it to the other three players at your table. Once everyone's in the room, you activate it. It'll give you some starting information. So it might say, oh, Sector 8 is not a comet, or Sector 6 is not a gas cloud. So you can start with some random knowledge that your opponents don't have. And from there, the app populates what's in every sector and also generates sets of rules. So every game is different. Every game, the rules are different. One game, the rule could be that gas clouds are never next to asteroids. But then the next game could say gas clouds are always two spaces away from asteroids. The rules are always randomly generated when you make the room. There's five rules, one of which gets revealed to the whole table at a certain point in the game, the rest of which you have to take turns to research. So on your turn, you're either going to research some of the rules that are secretly moving behind the curtain. You're either going to target an area to tell exactly what's in it, but you can only do that twice a game, and it's very cost intensive. Or the thing you'll be doing the most often is you'll be surveying. So when you survey, you're going to look at the board and see what parts of the sky are currently visible. So at the start of the game, you can see sectors 1 through 6. As the game progresses, a dial in the center of the board will rotate, blacking out certain sectors and making other ones visible. Once you see what's currently visible, you go into the app and say, okay, I want to survey sectors, let's say 2 through 4. Tell me how many dwarf planets are in that area. And the app will tell you how many are there, but it won't tell you in what sectors they are. So then on your notepad, you'll have to keep track. Okay, I asked it this. It said there's this many dwarf planets in these sectors. And as you slowly piece all this stuff together, you'll eventually manage to figure out, okay, so I know that there's one dwarf planet between sectors 2 and 4. And something else I found out is that 4 is definitely a comet. So it's either 2 or 3. And you slowly narrow down your options until you definitively can know what's in each sector and slowly figure out where Planet X might be. What makes it especially fun is that every 3 clicks of the dial that changes the visible sky, everyone gets the option to submit public scientific papers that will get peer review. So the way that works is you have an icon behind your player board for each of the different celestial objects. You can then choose if you want to publish anything. You don't have to. But if you are publishing, let's say, a paper on comets, you'll reveal that you're publishing something, but not what it's about. And you put it in the sector where you think the comet is. As the dial slowly moves around on the board, the papers will circulate down towards the center. When they reach the center, they flip face up. And then you go into the app to have them, quote unquote, peer reviewed to see if you're correct. So if I put a paper in Sector 6 saying that it was a gas cloud, the app will either tell me, correct, that's a gas cloud, or incorrect. Unlike every other piece of information that the app will give you, This is publicly announced to the entire table. So it gives you this question of, I know what's in Sector 6. Do I want to publish a paper there to get points, even if that's going to tell people what's in Sector 6 and they didn't have to research it? So you have to kind of weigh what's more worth your time, when you should reveal information. And at the end of the game, the person who found Planet X may not even win. They get 10 points for finding it, but every other player gets one last turn, and they have the potential to also gain up to 10 points if they correctly find it. So if you play your cards right and publish papers at the right time, you might end up with enough points to win even without being the first person to find the planet.
Wow, and the app helps create this experience and helps you keep track of it?
Yep, the app handles pretty much all the heavy lifting. So most of your turns will be plugging into the app what you're doing and it giving you a result.
Tim, have you tried that one?
Yeah, yep. We got to play that the other week as well. And like Zach was saying with the research papers and how somebody said in one of the reviews that we watched and made it an interesting thing to think about was I see Zach is always asking questions about gas clouds for most of the game. And I see him research a paper on Sector 5 and puts it down. I think to myself that he's been researching gas clouds the entire time. I'm going to bet on that Sector 5 is a gas cloud. And I'm hoping that he's right. And I'm basing my entire base of knowledge around that he's right. And he could be wrong, or he could be mentally trying to mess with me and say, you know, oh, I'm just going to put this here, but it's really a comet or something else. So it adds that little level of play and trickery if you want it to. So that was fun.
That sounds fun. Again, my gears are turning. How can I fit this into the puzzle of putting together? How about playing cards? I heard that there was a fight somewhere in a Target or a Walmart, I don't remember where people were fighting over Pokemon battle cards and Pokemon battle cards and football cards or something. And now Target's no longer selling either of these things. And we're in a Walmart, and Walmart wasn't selling them either.
Yeah, so it was Target and Walmart and Barnes & Noble and stuff like that stopped selling TCG cards in stores because of the fight that you're talking about. For the time being, we'll see if they end up bringing it back or not. But yeah, that was a thing that happened.
What I don't play Pokemon, and I'm not into football, so I'm having a difficult time imagining what would be somebody's motivation to fight over these cards. Did they reveal that in the story?
Money, trying to make money. Because Pokemon is in such demand right now. You know, that comes with scalping and people trying to make extra money. You know, it's been going on for forever, but, you know, the pandemic doesn't help with supply chains being messed up and people staying at home and wanting something to do or finding their old Pokemon cards and saying, oh, let me get back into Pokemon. So the supply and demand is all messed up right now. So it's causing people to be, crazy, I guess.
And Zach, you can take this Pokemon crisis and turn it into something for your Pokemon game, your role-playing game.
Yeah.
Anything else come out with the cards? Anything else going on?
Yeah, so the big news is in-store play has been suspended because of COVID. With everything going on, obviously. So just last week or the week before, Wizards of the Coast announced that in-store display will be unsuspended at the end of May. So that means we can start doing tournaments and everything again in store. So we're still discussing, you know, internally how we want to handle that. The most important thing is being safe right now still. So we're working on getting Everybody in store fully vaccinated. Most of us are there or halfway there. So we want to get that done first, and then, you know, figuring out the best way to keep it safe with how many people and, you know, how far apart everybody has to be. And it's going to be a whole thing that we have to figure out. But once we do, we're going to make the announcement and get everything start rolling again, hopefully to be, you know, fully back to normal reasonably soon. But yeah, so that's the big announcement that we'll be doing tournaments and everything back in store again. As soon as we, you know, again, make sure everything's safe and we're safe and everybody else is safe and we do it the right way.
That makes a lot of sense, and it's very reassuring. I know there's a, you know, somebody who drops by every now and then and a customer, that's very reassuring to me.
Yeah, that's why we want everybody to be safe and everything. I just had an experience where I walked into another, it wasn't a local gaming store, luckily. It's just another smaller store, and the person, you know, wasn't wearing a mask, and I was just like, yeah, we're still doing this. You know, I figured everybody would be, you know, on the same page by now, but we know that's not the case, unfortunately. So, like I said, we just want to keep everybody safe and make sure that we're doing it the right way. And if that takes a little bit more time, I think we're okay with that. If we're
right.
not the first store jumping in, you know, to start doing tournaments again, I'm okay with that.
And what is your availability this weekend? I might be in that part of Jersey either Saturday or Sunday.
I will be there. I'll be there all weekend. Sunday is my early day. I leave at 4, but I'll be there all weekend as scheduled. Oh, also, another important note for the store. We're in the process of hiring a new person, so maybe the next time you come by, he'll be there.
Awesome.
So I get to introduce you to him. So hopefully we'll be adding a new person, and, you know, so it'll be a new face maybe next time you come. He's been doing pretty well. He has familiarity with video games and cards. He manages some movie theaters in the area, so there's a bunch of stuff in common with all of us, music and video games, obviously, too. So yeah, that's been going pretty well.
You have very polite and respectful and knowledgeable people working for you. That's been my experience in all the time that I've known you.
Cool. Well, yeah, we appreciate that. We try to find some good people, and Scott is his name. Super nice guy, and like I said, he's been picking it up pretty well, and he fits right in. And yeah, so that's been going well.
Okay, that's great. Something to look forward to. And Zach, do you have any card games to talk about?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, so now we'll get to sharing contact information. Tim, how can people contact you and find Level 1 Games and enjoy all the things that you have there?
Best way to get in contact with us is on Facebook or Instagram. Just type in Level 1 Games. We're right on Route 23 in Pompton Plains. Once we make our decision about what we're doing with our tournaments and stuff, we'll throw all that information up on, like I said, on Facebook or Instagram or level1games.com as well. Also the place to check out whenever we get new inventory. We always take pictures and post it up. And you also see the shop dog every once in a while, too, making his appearance, too. So if you want to come pet a dog, you can come check out Fry. He's always he always wants attention. So, but yeah, so the best way is just Facebook and Instagram. Send us a message. Happy to help with any questions that you might have.
Okay, thank you very much. And Zach, how can people contact you? And is Shoot Again Games doing anything yet? Now that the pandemic is starting, it looks like to wrap up a little bit.
I know that they're looking forward to hopefully going to Origins at the end of the year, but I'm not sure yet if they're going to be hosting a table and selling their games or not. I am supposed to see Nick and Diane either late this month or early next month, so hopefully I should be able to get some news by then. As far as contacting me, you can always search my name on Facebook, or you can email me at mrmunnin@gmail.com.
Very awesome. We have a couple of minutes left, so I guess if you guys have any thoughts for people who are riding out the pandemic, what would you consider the best way for them to get involved with gaming at this particular point in time?
Right now, best way is, like, I always go back to Discord because that's the, you know, a big community that I'm part of. So I know Zach has been using Board Game Geek, Zach, right? Is that the...
Yep.
Yep, there's a forum, Board Game Geek. Zach can better describe. He's more active there.
Yeah, it's a forum mostly for people to like list their collections and look for other people to play with or to buy and sell games with each other. But they do have a nice section that's broken down by country and then by parts of country to try and find people in your area. So I've been posting on there and joining a couple other Discords that are for like board gaming and RPGs and stuff like that, trying to find people who are vaccinated and hopefully ready to jump back into physically hanging out with people once things open up.
Wow, that sounds like an awesome resource. Thanks to both of you. I really look forward to speaking with you every month. I'm glad that we got to do it today. I'm glad that things are going well for both of you, and may things become even better as we move through this pandemic. Thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you tuned in live, whether you pulled in, whether you're going to listen to us later on demand. Until next time, from us to you, joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And again, Tim and Zach, thank you so very much again.
Thank you very much.
Having me.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. Dream. Dream.